I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan on this Tuesday. August is 4 days old in 2020. Danny, how are we feeling this morning?
Excellent, my friend. I posted a bit of a scalder. People were not quite ready for this take, I don't think, on the old Twitter account, at Funny Danny, this morning as I was sitting outside on our little porch there and not getting rained on, not sweating. Just sitting there not sweating for the first time in what seems like months and months and months. And I came to the correct conclusion. I would take this, 68 degrees, beautiful rain, just falling down. Now, if it floods your basement, that stinks, or you know, if it ruins traffic or something like that, that stinks. Just in terms of overall experience, I will take this rainy day 1 million times out of 1 million times over any day where the temperature rises above 83 degrees. 83 and north of that, instant sweating, constant misery, awful, miserable, chafing, all the terrible things that come with just standing around like a fat, gross person. Outside, not sweating, way better than outside, constantly sweating. I'm right about this. And people, I'm sorry to cut you off. It's basically, as we know, summer is for children and Instagram models, and everyone else is fooling themselves. Back to you.
Yes, we talked about this last week a little bit, and I had said I enjoyed these storms in the evening because they lowered the temperature, and I would take days where you get a little rain that knocks down the temperature over just the constant sun. This, I won't agree with you on for a lot of reasons. Number one, it's incessant, and it doesn't end, and it just goes all day long. So it is prohibitive of actually going out for a walk. Like, I'm not getting my steps. I'm not getting my exercise like I like. I'd have to get, you know, rain gear that I don't even own and get an umbrella. I don't even know where one is and go outside. Number two, if you've got a dog, this is a disaster because you got to take your dog for a walk. And dogs, maybe some of them like the rain. I'll just speak for mine. Wants nothing to do with being outside. I can't even keep her outside long enough to go to the bathroom. So even though she's house trained, in situations like this, you're going to get the occasional, I haven't gone to the bathroom outside because you're keeping me out there longer than I want to be out there. So she's going to go in the house at some point inevitably when it rains for four straight days. So I'm not on board with that. In general, I think your point is a day where you get a little rain and it knocks down the humidity and it's no longer 100 degrees with humidity, which is disgusting and gross, is probably a superior option. But the days on end of this where you got flooding in roads in Maryland and people can't drive on certain paths because there's water across the road, I can't quite endorse that. This is to the extreme where I would rather probably right now today take one of those 95 and humid over day four in a row of just rain or whatever this is.
So again, when you're like, it's impacting, basements are flooding and trees fall down, I'm not advocating for trees to fall down or tornadoes or anything like that. What I'm saying is this pummels 95 and humid. I'll take this every time. I'll either use the umbrella or I'll stay inside. We'll figure it out. Being outside when it's hot is miserable, and I need everyone to acknowledge that. And the people that don't acknowledge that, I think have like mentally built little sort of mazes in their minds to try to basically like justify it to themselves. I was sitting outside. It was so pleasant. That's different than if I tried to sit outside for 2 seconds on any normal hot day and I have to come right back inside. There's no point in being outside when it's that hot. I'll take the pleasantness of just sort of a nice rainfall over a lot of other things that a lot of people won't take. And I understand that. I get that if you incorrectly have a dog, it limits your life and you can't like walk it around. The animal won't deal with the elements, even though they dealt with elements for millions of years. But now that they're domesticated, they can't deal with the elements. We should probably be able to do better. And if you want to walk the dog, you should be able to walk the dog. But anyway, here we are in a very pleasant morning where I haven't sweated yet. And that's a delightful experience for someone that's puffy.
Self-proclaimed dog guy, Danny Ruye, saying if you incorrectly own a dog. Interesting juxtaposition there between a guy who's on record saying he's a dog guy.
Big dog guy.
And yet also says if you incorrectly own a dog. Figure that one out somehow, some way. A couple of sports notes off the top here. There is a lot going on it was game after game after game yesterday. Baseball, basketball, hockey. The Caps took the L. Earl just talked about this. They did not have John Carlson, and yet still only allowed 2 goals in regulation to the high-octane Lightning. I felt pretty good defensively about their performance. They didn't really have breakdowns. Braden Holtby was pretty sharp, ended up allowing just the 2 goals on nearly 30 shots. They did not, as a top six, do almost anything in the offensive end of the ice. So your star Capitals, Ovechkin, Backstrom, Kuzi, at even strength, just not enough. Kuzi did have a power play goal, and they went to a shootout eventually. Quick take for you on that. Because these are now postseason games, Danny, and they're ruling, while it's not a playoff round, this round robin as a postseason game. So as an example, Kuzi yesterday scored the 2nd goal to tie the game, and he moves into 4th on the all-time list in playoff goals for the Capitals. They're tabulating all these numbers as postseason stats.
Weird.
I would prefer the game not end in a shootout. I would prefer them play overtime until there's a winner. Even if it's 3-on-3 and you played for 10, 15, 20 minutes, something like that. The shootout we do in the regular season, we don't do it in a playoff series ever. But yesterday they determined the winner in a shootout and the Lightning won. And I would have said that if the Caps won too. Your thoughts on that?
So I'm with you. Because I'm not sure what these games are. You know what I mean? Like if it's a true playoff game, if it really is playoffs, let's stop the shootout situation. I get that they don't want games to go 3, 4, 5, 6 overtimes as you're like trying to ease back into this thing. And a big part of this is just to get these guys fresh.
And
right?
If you stay 3-on-3, you're not going to go any crazy amount of time.
Presumably.
Someone's going to score a goal pretty soon.
Yeah. So, but early on, I just sort of felt like the Caps were a little bit slow and they couldn't get the puck out of their own zone. It just was constant rush after constant rush. I thought they held up pretty well, as you touched on, against Tampa. I loved that Richard Ponick goal. That's to me how you get out of it, right? That's the bloop base hit for a baseball player that's in a slump. Threw a puck to the net, kept crashing. You get one past Vasilevsky. Then I thought they had some life and energy and played a much better second part of that game. So to me, I'm with you. I was actually pretty encouraged despite the fact that they dropped it in the shootout. I liked a lot of what I saw. That was the group that looked like the team this past week that had that kind of scrimmage or whatever where they were flying around and looked really good. That second half of that game, they got their legs underneath them and were pressuring a little bit more. I mean, for the most part, it was a lot of ice tiltage in favor of Tampa at times. And I'm kind of going, what group is this? But I get it. It's trying to ease your way back in, good opponent and everything. So I was encouraged, a little bit annoyed that the shootout went the way it did, obviously.
Yeah, they played a terrible first period. I don't know that they had the puck in the offensive zone, it didn't feel like, in those first 20 minutes. But right. The Nats are back today after what feels like a week-long break. But they had 4 days without a game. So they didn't play Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or yesterday. They got the series off Friday through Sunday over the weekend that they were supposed to have played against the Marlins, who are riddled with COVID-19. And then they had a built-in day off already yesterday. So they're back to action, having played 7 games against the Mets team today that has already played 11 times. It's going to be interesting to see. They had just gotten going offensively. They were really starting to hit the ball a little bit. If this timing and the time off throws them off offensively, but their pitching staff should be built up and strong and ready to go with a little bit of a break. They've got New York for the first of just 2 games back-to-back, and they're going to get Steven Matz and Rick Porcello. The really good news, in addition to Juan Soto being back, which we could throw a party about, is that they missed Jacob deGrom, who threw last night in a Mets win over the Braves. So they don't have to deal with probably the best pitcher in baseball right now in this little mini nasty two-game series. But, man, it's felt like forever not getting to watch a Nats game, and they are back today, which is great.
That is – these – I'll never take it for granted. I keep saying this. Remember yesterday we were talking about this with regards to the NBA, with the NHL, and whatever baseball game we get. It can be taken away like that. All it took was, you know, apparently according to Derek Jeter, a couple Marlins going out for coffee. I don't believe that for one second, by the way, his account of what the Marlins were doing. Sounds like to me, according to some of the reporting, they weren't just, you know, going out for some milk or coffee or whatever the heck it was. But that's all it took to take away a week of games, basically. That's all it took for them to, for us to lose 4, 5, 6 days of this thing was, you know, a couple Marlins doing something stupid. And that robbed me of Max Scherzer, of Juan Soto, of all these other guys that I have been dying to see for months. I can't wait. I'm so excited to watch them today. I hope this this dumb rain. Who likes the rain anyway? Hope this stuff clears out.
Washington football note, as we kind of give you the latest from around D.C. sports. Josh Harvey Clemens, who was in a battle for a roster spot at linebacker anyway, is going to opt out of the season. He told Washington that he will not be playing. Remember, they drafted Kalik Hudson, who we had on the show from Michigan, who could help fill in for Harvey Clemens, who's a little bit of a tweener and can excel in coverage potentially. So he becomes the latest NFL player and the first Washington player since Caleb Brantley to tell them that he will not participate in the 2020 season. Meanwhile, another storyline yesterday, Ron Rivera saying he was pleasantly surprised by how far along Alex Smith is. You are hearing a lot of that for what it's worth. I don't know what it means. I don't know what it's going to equate to. I just know that all the people that are speaking about Alex Smith wearing team-issued gear at the facility are saying that they are blown away by the progress he has made. The latest of those folks is head coach Ron Rivera. Speaking of Washington football, longtime ace tight end Jordan Reed has a new home, and it might just be the perfect fit. Plus, this hour, Antonio Brown is getting some interest from a contender. You're listening to Grant and Danny on the Fan. At Grant H. Paulson, at Funny Danny on Twitter, if you want to get a hold of us without calling in. Welcome back, G&D on 106.7 The Fan. Saw this yesterday, Jordan Reed, the 30-year-old tight end who came to fame here in Washington as one of the best pass catchers at his position over the last several years, dealt with many concussions and looked like he could be on his way out of football, has signed a contract with the San Francisco 49ers. So I had predicted all along, Danny, he was either going to end up in San Fran or L.A. because the two coaches who have meant the most to him in his career, who he adores and loves, and who have always absolutely done everything they could for him because they think the world of him, are Kyle Shanahan, now the head coach of the 49ers, and Sean McVay, who now runs the Rams. He links back up with Kyle Shanahan, the coordinator in Washington when his dad, Mike, was the head coach when Jordan Reed was drafted, and they got him on the field really starting in 2014, was when he broke out the year after Kyle Shanahan left. But his rookie year, 45 catches, 499 yards, the development that season, he points to still today all the time as kind of having been his ability to transcend in his career. Then he played under McVay, not just in that 13 season when he was his tight ends coach, but in 2014 when Jay Gruden was the head coach, and in 2015 when McVay was the offensive coordinator and the play caller. Obviously, Washington that year won the division, and Reed, 87 catches, 950 yards, 11 touchdowns, became one of the 10 or so best weapons on offense in the league. But I love this fit. Now, I don't know what he's got left. He didn't play at all last year after another concussion. I believe he's had 7. I'm not surprised that he wants to keep playing, but I've crossed my fingers that he doesn't get another concussion at this point.
Yeah.
But, like, in 2018, if you remember, he played 13 games. He was not the same guy. He caught 54 passes, and he just wasn't as dynamic. So maybe with a year off, you know, getting healthier, he could get back to that level. That was the big storyline going into last football season, was that Jordan Reed was back to his old ways. And then he got a concussion in the preseason and didn't play. I just know this. He and Kyle have made some beautiful music together and think the world of each other. You put him in a two tight end situation, opposite maybe the best tight end in football right now, that's petrifying for teams to have to worry about Kittle and Reed.
Yeah, Kyle Shanahan will figure it out. And much the way that you know, Belichick and company figured out what to do with Aaron Hernandez and Gronkowski. You know, those kind of two guys at once. One a far better receiver than he is a blocker. You'll figure out how to deploy that weaponry very, very well. I actually was convinced, I was sure that he was going to go to McVay and the Rams, for the record. Because to me, what makes this San Francisco offense so good is Kittle, because he's such a good blocker that if you for 1 second go, all right, we'll run nickel, we'll put extra defensive back in to try to deal with George Kittle, that guy's going to end up in the fifth row because Kittle's going to pick him up like a forklift and throw him around. He is so good in that regard, and that's never been Jordan Reed's forte, which you'll figure it out again if you're Kyle Shanahan. If you can tap into 75% of how dynamic Reed was a couple years ago. I mean, the play that I always point to, GP, is that ridiculous tie against Cincinnati because a chip shot field goal was missed. But remember this play where he gets down the field, I think it was some kind of a deep out, makes a catch, makes three different guys miss, and just runs past everybody and dives into the end zone. And you go, it's Kittle. For that play, it may have been, Travis Kelce. But for the most part, there's a couple guys alive that could do that. That's not even a Gronk thing. Gronk would have run through a couple guys. But the way that Jordan Reed made that play, just a handful of guys on this planet could have done. I don't think that guy's ever coming back. I think he's gone. With all due respect to Craig Hoffman, who would tell me about how he revamped his core and lifted and pronated a certain way when he was working out, I don't think that Jordan Reed exists anymore. What does exist, potentially, is a guy that can be a pretty competent receiver and who can run some routes and, you know, take advantage of some matchups. I don't think that dynamic, if you feature him, he's a 1,200-yard, 10-touchdown guy, exists anymore.
Yeah, I don't either, but to your original point, I think, that you made, I don't think he has to be that guy as right. A second tight end in San Francisco. I mean, they're not bringing him in now to carry that offense. There was a time where Washington needed him to be their number one weapon, where they weren't going to win. And in that 2015 season when Kirk Cousins lit it up down the stretch and played at an MVP level, Reed was uncoverable. Teams were bracketing and doubling him, and it didn't matter. They couldn't do anything with him. His footwork was too good. His route running was too exceptional. There just weren't players in the league at his position that were his size who could do what he was doing. That was when he was at his apex, and it was 5 years ago now, as of this winter. So, do I think he can ever play like that again? No, I don't. I think that's too many injuries, not just concussions, but he's had all kinds of other problems. I mean, he's very much a frail, injury-prone guy. There's no denying that. But if used in a limited capacity, situationally, and I trust Kyle Shanahan, who I think is brilliant as a football savant and as a passing game coordinator and designer, to get him some one-on-one matchups maybe on third down, to get him out on the field in multi-tight end sets. So now, you know, you got people that are paid on the other coaching staff just to see who's getting shuttled into the huddle, and they're going, okay, they're going two tight ends, and you're throwing an extra linebacker out there. You're playing them as if they're about to run the ball, and now they come out with George Kittle, who you can't cover, and Jordan Reed, who you can't cover, and they're splitting those two guys out four and five wide. I just don't know that teams are going to be able to defend that. There's a lot of ifs with him. The first of them is if he's on the field, if he stays healthy, then you've got if he still has anything left. But I'd even say, just from a sheer pass-catching standpoint, 50% of Jordan Reed is better than anyone on that team that isn't George Kittle, just from the standpoint of catching the football.
Just as a receiver, yeah.
What's interesting, though, is when you're now no longer a starting tight end, or I shouldn't use that phrase, like a number one tight end, you have to block a little bit, I would think. Uh-huh. I mean, you can't just be a pass catcher. It's cool to do that when you are the guy the passing game goes through here in Washington. But like, someone hit me up last night who covers the 49ers, and they're like, hey, what kind of blocker is Reed? I'm assuming he's a decent blocker if they're bringing him in here in this role. And I was like, well, actually, not so much. I mean, that's never been
terrible.
A strength. Right. I mean, it's a weakness. So that's one area where I would just be interested. But I think that's up to Kyle Shanahan now to get smart and find a way to use him. But wouldn't you agree with me, there's a possibility he ends up being a monster? Not necessarily huge numbers, but just from a matchup standpoint for them, where he completely changes things for Garoppolo on third down?
And that's, to me, where it's got to be, right? It's got to be an obvious passing down, because if he's in there in the running game, I mean, you saw what would happen over the years here in Washington. It's he's trotting off the field. Here comes Jeremy Sprinkle, the telegraph. Here's the run. Jordan Reed comes back on the field. You could try to run, but, you know, he's going to get pushed around and throttled, and I don't want him to have that contact when you basically line him up as a tight end, and your run's not going to be successful, or it's obviously a throw. So that's something that a really smart offensive guy has to figure out what to do, because in D.C. it was an obvious tell, right, if he trotted off the field. If he's on the field, it means it's most likely like a 3rd and 6, a 3rd and 7, and he can win still, I think, an awful lot there.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You are listening to The Fan. We will see if he can extend his career. I mean, we're talking a lot of X's and O's and the analytics and going into, like, the role he could have. The bottom line is he's making a big decision for him and his family just by continuing to play. Mm. And I've been uncomfortable seeing all these people getting upset that he's still playing football, as if, you know, that's not his choice and his choice alone. Like, Jordan Reed shouldn't even be in this league anymore. Why? Because he's had a bunch of concussions? Does he get any say in that, or is that just you? It's scary, and every time he gets tackled, you kind of cringe a little bit, but you hope for him that he can stay between those white lines and keep making plays, because it's obviously very important to him. Antonio Brown wants to play again. Not a concussion issue for him, per se, in terms of the quantity with Jordan Reed's background, but a guy who's acted a fool enough that teams are not that willing to take chances on him. The Seahawks are monitoring him pretty closely, so we'll get into whether or not he's going to get a shot with a contender next on The Fan. In a half hour at 11 o'clock, Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post, columnist who writes about all things, but there are very few writers at the Post and in the country who do a better job covering baseball. We'll talk to him about what has been a rough start to the season for Major League Baseball and Rob Manfred. Also, want to get into the Nats, who play again today. The 4-day break is over. Juan Soto will make his season debut, we assume. Also next hour after Barry at 11:15 or so, The Rock is part of a group of folks who bought the XFL. We can react to that and talk about whether or not the league's got a chance to succeed based on what we saw in 2020. So we'll get into that coming up on GND today. So you watched the Caps shootout like I did yesterday. Mm-hmm. They lose to the Lightning. Add this to the list of things that is blood-boiling to me in sports. Let's just make a quick list just off the top of our head. I always talk about receivers who drop passes that they need to be caught. You know, if it's high difficulty or you got a DB breaking it up while you're trying to catch it or something, I don't get angry. But the guy that's just standing there flat-footed and drops a pass in his hands is one of those things to me that I just can't abide. I have no time for, no patience for. What's on your list of things that drive you nuts in sports?
Ooh, that's substantial. I will say the zero adjustment, zero attempt made to just put the ball in play with a runner on third and less than two outs. When the opponent is giving you a run, they would like you to score the run and to trade for an out. And we're still doing the same, let's just try to homer because expected runs for 162 games. Put the ball in play, score the run. Put the ball in play, score the run. That will always drive me crazy.
It's a great one. So I added one to the list yesterday, which is in a shootout when a skater does not get a shot off at all.
You mean the Kuznetsov?
Yeah, Kuzi does this from time to time.
You mean and that one?
There are other guys who have had this issue, but and it's nothing that they, you know, it's basically a miscalculation, right? Like they go too wide and the goalie plays it well and they know that either they don't have an angle to get a shot off and hit the net or they don't have a chance to score or whatever. So like Kuzi yesterday is one of three Capital skaters who shot in the shootout. He didn't take a shot. I know that you can't score if you don't shoot. Mm-hmm. He like skated very slowly doing like a snake bit where he's slithering all over the ice. And then he comes really weirdly the side of the net. And the goalie, Vasilevsky in this case, kind of flies over in front of him. And he just doesn't shoot. He's just
the move didn't work. Yeah, the move didn't work. And that happens. Just try to flick it towards the goal. I mean, you know what I mean?
It's just, he's sort of run out of room. Puck. I don't care if it's 6 feet wide of the bar and it just goes to the back wall. I just need you to flick the puck like you're shooting.
Shoot the shot.
It's just on my list. It's just one of those things.
I'm with that one. another thing in the hockey is the result, and this is the general feeling I have. For example, the biggest thing I'm going with here is, remember when Tom Wilson, and I can't remember which Penguin it was, when they both went after each other, right, in terms of a check, and Tom Wilson, because he's a freight train, knocked the dude on his duff. And they were like, oh, that's such a dirty hit. That's not a dirty hit. Tom Wilson has had plenty of dirty hits. The dirty hits should be called dirty hits. You getting your bleep knocked out because you went up against that angry bull is on you, dude. I hate that. Whatever that is drives me crazy. So we can figure that out.
Yeah, it's you're paying for your track record, which I'm a track record guy. But we could still use our eyes and see what's dirty and what isn't, I think. Seahawks are looking into Antonio Brown. And apparently, I don't know what this means, but you see this sometimes. They're keeping tabs on him. They're monitoring him. I'm guessing
they
that means
that
they're
bit.
Doing their due diligence. Maybe they,
well, the Seahawks
they've got surveillance set up.
Remember they were keeping tabs on Colin Kaepernick that time, too? They just kept tabs on him and didn't sign him for 4 years? Even though,
right.
like, and Pete Carroll was like, oh, we regret it so hard. So much regret. You can sign him today. At any time. If you're that regretful, fix it. Sign
He's still available.
Yeah.
You still don't have a great backup quarterback situation. So
they love keeping tabs.
If you want to sign him, you could. They are apparently also open to the idea. They're open to signing Josh Gordon. I guess that's the same as keeping tabs.
So open.
So, yeah, this is their move. This is what they do. But I actually think eventually Antonio Brown is going to sign with them. That's kind of the way things are leaning at this point. He's going to have to serve at least an 8-game suspension. Mm-hmm. Here's how I see this playing out for Brown, and it's going to be really angering for me when it happens. But I believe that Antonio Brown is going to get a contract with a team, you know, last year it was New England, but a good team that needs an extra piece or a spark on offense. And he'll be able to play in the second half of the season, and then he'll play in the playoffs. And who knows? I mean, heck, he could end up playing in or winning the Super Bowl and getting himself a ring by doing nothing but acting a fool and having earned no real opportunity with his actions here recently and how he's acted toward the Steelers, who he was a complete and utter unprofessional child when he was there at the end of his time. Then he gets traded to Buffalo, and I don't even remember how that ended. Do you remember that whole fiasco where he basically forced his way out and said he didn't want to be there? Or I guess he put the kibosh on that deal and put the kibosh and
put
didn't
kibosh.
Want to be a Bill. So then he went to the Raiders, who he handpicked, and then he decided he didn't want to be there either, and he just completely forced his way out of there. And then he went to New England, and he played one game, and he caught 4 passes for 56 yards, and he hadn't played anywhere else since.
And committed a couple
of
alleged
season.
Crimes. I mean, the whole thing is just a mess. So there are a few teams that would make sense. Now Seattle, actually, typically they are a team that you normally say, God, they're a couple of receivers away. Well, they got a nice young receiving core, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, et cetera. Like, San Francisco would be a great fit, honestly, because that it's basically the Debo Samuel show at this point. There are a couple really good teams that could use a receiver that's dynamic like that guy if he's going to act right, if he's going to show up and do what he's supposed to do. But,
if he's going to act right, there's 32 teams that could use this
Well,
guy.
That's true.
He's
that's
probably
true.
The best wide receiver in the league. I mean, he's right there with Julio Jones, different kind of guy. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best receivers who's ever lived if he's going to act right.
Right.
That's the problem.
That is the issue. So I guess, he would help everybody, obviously, like teams would benefit. But there are a few sort of receiver star, like maybe one dynamic playmaker away from an offense being really, really good. He could play opposite Devontae Adams in Green Bay. That would be a great fit. He could play for the Colts and Phil Rivers. You could have something there. I mean, the Ravens could use him, hoping that Hollywood Brown gets healthy. But there's a bunch of teams, you're right, that would really benefit from him. But I think what's going to happen is kind of what you said. He'll serve the suspension and, go to a contender and end up thriving in a marquee game, and it's going to be annoying.
Yeah, I just don't see him not playing in the NFL again this season. And there was a point where I thought, well, he's just done too much. He's been too volatile. He's proven himself to be too untrustworthy. He'll never play in the NFL again. And that's just not the traction right now. That does not look like kind of the way this is trending. Now, it's been a few months since he's gotten arrested, you know, or been interviewed by police. It's been a few months since he's said anything so crazy that people are questioning his sanity. So I guess that's good. That's a positive sign.
Hey, neato.
Seems to me like he's just kind of laying low right now, but it's going to be annoying. But this is what happens. When you're ultra-talented, and you got to be one of the best. I mean, you can't just be skilled. But when you have an elite collection of skills like he does, you know this, Danny. You get more lives than a cat. I mean, these contending teams, they will make deals with whatever bad they have to potentially if it means you can put them over the top.
You will, I mean, whether it's like the Manny Ramirez corollary, right? If you're driving in 125 runs, people don't care. You know, you could do whatever. You could behave however you see fit. If you could still do it, people will find a way, find an excuse. And I think you're right. I mean, part of me thinks that's okay, weirdly, not to the extreme of what he's done, obviously, but part of me thinks that's fine, it's a reflection of how unfair life is. There's nothing fair about this existence. All we're sort of granted is, you know, that we try not to, well, hold on, I could get into a deep philosophy there. I guess the point I'm trying to make is, it's okay that a more talented person generally is going to get more opportunities than someone that's less talented, right? That's sort of the hierarchy. That's how kind of the whole thing keeps churning. And everybody, you know, pay scale reflects that, life reflects that. That's a normal thing. But it's frustrating when somebody takes, it doesn't mean I have to root for him, somebody takes those opportunities, smacks them in the face, is awful to anybody that wants to help him and wants success and wants it to be him to be a part of their thing, and he still gets more opportunities. You know, it's the super attractive guy with abs up to his neck that's mistreated every girlfriend he's ever had. But because he's a dreamboat, he'll get another, you know, the next attractive woman that walks in the room will be smitten with him. And I'm just over here dumpy on the side. You know what I mean? Like, that's the feeling.
100%. He will play this year. I do believe that. And I mean, he deserves the team that's picking first overall. You know, that dysfunction and some island of misfit toys all thrown together to be the 28th best offense in the league, but he'll be a part of some high-functioning operation and probably play in some playoff games. We're Grant and Danny. You are listening to The Fan. Let's go down a level to college football. Another big shot against the possibility of a season with another outbreak at another school right now. Plus, players are trying to band together to use the leverage that they've got right now to create some change at the collegiate level. We can get into that next right here on The Fan, ahead of Barry's for Luga on the Nationals at 11 o'clock. We've been wondering whether or not college football is going to be able to pull off a season. Well, things aren't looking good. It seems like every day something else happens that makes it more obvious that a collegiate football season in the fall just seems like a difficult, if not impossible, task. But here's your latest storyline. A massive COVID outbreak has enveloped the Rutgers football team. Reading now from NewJersey.com this morning, Keith Sargent writing a story. The number of cases connected with the Rutgers University team, Danny, has doubled from 15 to 28 players over the last couple of days. Multiple staff members as well, three people with knowledge of the situation, telling New Jersey Advanced Media Monday night. They spoke on the condition of anonymity because they weren't allowed to be talking, but the AD is Pat Hobbs. The head coach is Greg Schiano. They're not available for comment yet, as of last evening anyway, to discuss what's going on. But Rutgers showed back up for work on June 15th, and at that time, two players tested positive. In the next batch of cases, two more tested positive. They've got a lot of players who have symptoms that range from fevers to headaches to sore throats, and then other players who are completely asymptomatic and testing positive despite thinking they were 100% healthy. But you're talking about now almost 30 college kids on this football program who have tested positive, plus this thing is now spreading throughout the staff as well. And this is just the latest team to go through this.
Yeah, and again, I don't know how college football could possibly happen. I really don't. Because if these kids are on campus, right there, it's a deal breaker. There's no way to you know, I know that in a lot of schools, they'll have their own dorms or housing situations or and the like, but just the comings and goings, the teeming with life like a college campus is. And it sounds like, you know, a lot of schools, I know, I'm pretty sure GW here locally, even though they have no college football, but they're going to be remote to start the fall. I think AU is doing the same thing, and maybe Georgetown too. But I don't know how you could stop this thing, because college rosters are larger typically than NFL rosters, right? You get 100 kids, you get gray shirts, you get red shirts, you get, you know, all the student aides and everybody else. It's just so many people. I just don't know how you could do this. But what was interesting about that, and that breakout is going to be, I think, more typical than not when it comes to trying to get these guys back together.
Well, how do
but
you
I'm sure
slow
you
it
saw.
With the proximity?
I don't know.
How do you slow it with the fact that these students are always together and you're on campuses? And there is probably, and I am judging a book by its cover. I understand that. I'm speaking in a generality here, and maybe I could be proved wrong. But I'm not sure that there is a group of people, that there is a subset of folks that are going to be less active in trying to prevent the spread of this virus than college-age students, than college-age kids. I mean, there's just not a group of people walking among us in a general way that are going to kind of put society over themselves at a lesser clip. And I think we all understand that. We know that. We can see by the crowds and the parties and some of the stories that have come out. I mean, good luck. It's part of the problem at the professional level with 21, 22, 23, 24-year-olds who have come into some money trying to tell them not to go out. It's almost an impossibility to try to convince them to do that. So even if the college football players who have something that they have to keep themselves available for are going to live properly, they're still potentially mingling with and interacting with all these other kids that don't necessarily care as much because they feel like they're not at risk. But this morning, Rashad Bateman, who's a wide receiver from Minnesota, joining Caleb Farley, the cornerback from Virginia Tech, as a couple of projected first-round picks who have taken opt-outs at the college level. Now, it's one thing to try to push through professionally for all the money that you make or all the money at stake. While there's a ton of money to be made by the NCAA in college football, the players aren't particularly seeing that. But, Danny, one thing I know that you've been tracking closely is this story out west where players are now in the Pac-12 trying to use the leverage they've got to create some change.
And it's fascinating because the first parts of this thing are non-COVID related. It's just, it's interesting because this is like, it's sort of striking while the iron is hot. The points that they make in this, and this is a letter that a bunch of Pac-12 players have signed with the hashtag We Are United. So there's a lot to the letter. You could look it up and find it if you haven't seen it yet. But there are a lot of really excellent points in this note about when it comes to standardized health testing and the rights that these athletes should have. There's no great plan. There's no transparency of the plan. And this is something that should be of concern to athletes. They got no representation when somebody shoves a waiver in front of their face that says, you want to be a linebacker at Ohio State? You sign this. Oh, okay. You know, and the pressure to do that. That's not what should be happening. There shouldn't be, you know, liability waivers signed without counsel or supervision or otherwise. People should be made available, their rights made available to them. The second part is they don't have a testing plan in place, it sounds like, and players should be very concerned about that. And that's all good. They go on, though. They're like, and another thing, we should get 50% of the revenue. And another thing, we should also be able to sell our likeness with Oregon gear on or USC gear on. And another thing, we want, and it's going, wait. I thought we were focused on COVID stuff here, but they're kind of taking this opportunity to take a shot at the commissioner who they want his salary lowered and a bunch of other things. It's a very interesting letter that I think could have been a great strike for these players, just especially when it comes to COVID and the pandemic. That's also, here are the other rights that we want, and other money that we want that I think maybe kind of dooms on arrival.
This.
Right.
Here's some other things. It's like giving you the demands letter where you want 42 buffalo wings cooked extra crispy, and you want your cottage cheese in a bowl shaped like a square. In a letter published by the Players Tribune, and that's where this all came out, the demands for increased health and safety protections, I think a lot of people saw that coming and said that's really, really smart. They
that's
also
right,
then
you.
Asked for a commitment to social justice reform. And as Hugh said, this is the big one that was kind of, wait, what? Redistribution of football revenue. So it was health and safety. So they want COVID-19 liability waivers to be prohibited and universal safety measures seeking medical insurance for 6 years post-eligibility. I mean, those are some cool, thoughtful, I'd say pretty good ideas, right? You want 6 years after you play to have medical insurance taken care of. I think that's the least that these schools could probably do for you with some of the money that you're bringing in and how much you're helping them. Then we talk about social justice. They're demanding that the Pac-12 form a permanent civic engagement task force to address social injustice. Again, not particularly related to COVID, but I think that that's something the Pac-12 should be open to and probably could do a lot of good for a lot of these players, so why not? And then you've got the revenue redistribution, maybe the most bold thing that they asked for. Players want 50% of each sport's revenue to be evenly distributed among athletes. So whatever comes in, we get 50% of all of that, and all of the money gets spread between all of the athletes. Now, I don't know if that's every sport. Like, does a swimmer get the same amount as a football player? I'm not really sure. I'd have to do more digging on that. But clearly, you've had players who were very active during a lot of the protests and some of the things that happened, and they've decided this is a time to use their voice for change in their own little corner of the world as well.
And again, I understand the desire to say, well, while we're here, let's talk about everything else. To me, this should have been about the main issue on the table right here. They're trying to tackle an awful lot. Forgive the pun, because it's these are football players that are doing this. But basically, to me, this should have been about, hey, health, safety, COVID type stuff. You guys can't just take advantage of us and trot us out there and say whoopsie daisy when we have a breakout or a pandemic like is happening with Rutgers, etc. You guys need to have a better plan in place. Just you're supposed to protect us above all else, and you're not, and you don't. So let's get that part right. And then also, it's just like, whew, by the way, we're just going to eliminate all women's sports because we're going to take 50% of the revenues and distribute it amongst the football team, right? Because we won't be able to afford
it. That's my question. Is it just because of the football? Are they distributing it for all athletes or just football?
Well, I mean, for money that comes in, right? And the revenue sports are football and basketball. There's a couple places where sports make money.
I could be wrong. You tell me if I'm wrong. The way I read it was, of all the money that comes in, it gets spread to all the athletes, not the athlete who makes the money. Like, football money is not different than soccer money, than baseball money. So it's like all the money that comes in from the athletics, and then we spread that to all the athletes is the way I saw it. I could be wrong about that.
Oh, I thought it was, you know, we want to make our salaries, like the paying players.
They definitely want to make debate. Some salaries.
You know, we want to make money off our image, our likeness, and everything else. I read it as pay us, right, which is a perfectly fine idea, but then it's a death knell for non-revenue sports. And some people don't care about that, and that's fine.
Yeah, I'm just looking up on Axios the way they wrote this, and it says players ask for 50% of each sport's revenue to be distributed among athletes. So, yeah, possibly that would mean football goes to football players, baseball goes to baseball players. You know, good luck getting other sports to sign off on that because they all benefit and need that football money, to your point. Barry Svrluga joins us next on Grant and Danny. The Nats are back in action against the Mets tonight. We might actually see Juan Soto. We'll talk to him about that next week.
Football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.